This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My name is Patsy Gill. Are you writing a book or a screenplay? Need some advice? Give me a call, 727-441-3000 or toll free at 1-866-826-1340. This is WTAN 1340. It was funny, this morning I woke up and, normally here in the past few weeks in Clearwater, we have had just the most wonderful weather, Chamber of Commerce weather, 85 degrees and sunny, so beautiful. And then this morning I wake up and I look out the window and it's foggy and it's gloomy and it's spooky, which actually sets the right mood for my guest today, a mystery writer whose books are set in Salem. So today I'm very happy to welcome to my show, Carol Perry, who will tell us a little bit about her books.
Hi.
Hi. Happy always to talk about the books.
Okay. Hold on one moment. Before we talk about your books, we're going to play something for you. And let's see if you can tell us what it is. Little diabolical music.
It is
scary. Perfect for
Halloween music. Beautiful background for Salem.
And are you originally from Salem?
Oh, yes. I was born there.
Wow. And then you come out with this wonderful series of books.
All based in Salem, the magical city. Half the people there think the whole place is haunted, and maybe it is. Wonderful history. It was a great place to grow up. Not too big and not too small, always something to do. When I was a younger person growing up there, people didn't talk too much about we had to refer to it as the witchcraft delusion, and we wanted to promote the beautiful homes, the lovely maritime history, the extraordinary museums, and we kind of downplayed the witchcraft thing. And that continued right up until Bewitched hit the air, and Samantha did a couple of programs in Salem. And actually, just down the street from City Hall, there is now a bronze statue of Samantha.
So the city was very smart to embrace it and make it
absolutely
theirs.
And Halloween.
And you've embraced.
Oh yes, Halloween is crazy in Salem.
Well, because you were born on Halloween.
I was born on Halloween Eve.
Oh wow!
And that's the publicity department at Kensington Publishing just loved that fact. It just makes it all the more fun to be a writer about Salem.
Your series is called the
Witch City Mysteries.
Witch City Mysteries, and the second book came out at the end of March.
Yes.
And you have a third book coming out
October 29th.
Wow.
The day before my birthday and 2 days before Halloween.
Well, I think the development of your character, why don't you tell us a little bit how you came up with this idea? And I very much like the way you've developed your character and Lee Barrett, and I think, it's very intriguing.
Lee Barrett has become very real to me. The germ of the idea came some years ago. There used to be a TV show here. The host's name was Linda Bennett, and Linda is a psychic, and she was a call-in psychic, TV psychic, and she would read people over the air, which gave me the idea for Lee Barrett's job. Which only she does her psychic thing over the phone between old spooky movies. Then, so this idea had been simmering for quite a long time. I knew it had to be Salem. I dreamed up the call letters of the station, WICH-TV. There is no such station in Salem, but shouldn't there be?
Yes, there should.
Why didn't someone think of this?
As a matter of fact, when I saw it, I said, could it be real?
No, unfortunately it isn't. But I used as many real places as I could. I mentioned the Hotel Hawthorne. Usually it's places that restaurants I really like. In a Pig's Eye is one of the restaurants. And the Lyceum, which is very old and wonderful restaurant. And some of the old and scary streets. I mentioned various landmarks. So when I do a book signing, I give away a map of Salem so that people can follow Lee's adventures, because the street that she works on is real and her house is real.
Well, that's great. You brought today one of the maps of Salem for me, and I know I will enjoy it because I always love to follow a map when I'm reading a book. If I'm reading a book about Paris, I pull out one of my Paris
really?
Maps. And New York, I love to follow it along. And so I just was so thrilled when you came in with the map.
Yeah, I like maps, too. I have some framed. Well, you do, too. I have some framed around just to look at because they're beautiful. The second book, Tales You Lose, the one that just came out last month, is set in an old department store that's been closed up for many years. Now, that just happens that I was the advertising and sales promotion manager for an old family-owned department store in Gloucester, Massachusetts. And anyone who's ever been to Brown's of Gloucester, which is long since closed, and may or may not have been haunted, they will recognize the floor plan and the different departments. It has been converted, in my book, into a school called the Tabitha Trumbull Academy of the Arts, because it was in the book named Trumbull's Department Store, and it is haunted.
Well, I like the way that you've developed your main character, but also her aunt, and we must mention the cat, because it was funny. Now, this is very strange. Last night, the last thing I did before I went to bed was I looked at your website, and there you have a photo of a yellow cat with yellow eyes. And so when I woke up this morning and saw this fog and this mist and this gloom, I said, this is very eerie. Now, I'm not a real paranormal kind of person, but it was very strange that when I looked at my computer, you know, there was that cat. And I was thinking, oh, boy, I think this might have a little bit of a meaning behind it. Where'd you come up with this cat?
This cat, I love cats in general. And the yellow cat just sort of came to me. His name originally was Orion, as in the constellation, but Lee calls him Orion, O'Ryan, in the Irish way. So his name is Orion. My own cat is a gray cat, not a yellow striped cat, but I'm still looking for a boy kitten who is a very nice boy kitten with stripes and golden eyes.
Yes, well, now you're going to have to start traveling. You know, a few weeks ago we had the Beach Babes Book Blast here in Tampa, which was a lot of fun, and quite a few of the romance authors came mm-hmm. down with their models, their cover models.
Oh.
You know, these big, hunky, gorgeous guys.
Yes.
And I'm like, I know, it's serious. Now, I mean, one of them from New York, she came down with three big, hunky, gorgeous guys. You know, it's nice to travel with your models, but I think you're going to have to start traveling with a big yellow cat.
I should travel with a big yellow cat, along with my big, hunky husband.
That's right. That's right. Well, the husband has to carry the big, big cat. But I don't know. This woman brought down the three models. I said, what did you do with your husband? And she said, oh, I sent him over to the beach. I said, oh, that's very nice.
Yes, sure.
So, but it's a good idea, huh? Travel with a cat. You'll really get noticed.
I know. And you notice that my photo that's in my website, I have a lovely yellow cat next to me, which was a borrowed cat because my cat, I didn't want to spray paint her.
Yeah, good idea. Good idea. But yeah, you definitely have to get a nice yellow cat.
I'm looking
cat.
For one.
Because Orion is a nice cat.
He is. No one knows exactly where Orion came from or how he came to be so magical, but he certainly is a cat of some repute. And Aunt Ibby in the story has become much beloved. Aunt Ibby is a retired research librarian who is very, very well-versed in all things technical. Aunt Ibby tweets and twitters and does all kinds of technical things and is very helpful. The books in her home library are arranged according to the Dewey Decimal System.
Oh, I wish I had done that. I can't find my books. I can't
find another writer once told me that my bookshelves look like editorial indigestion.
Oh, mine are all over the place, and I am trying. I must think about doing the Dewey System because I can't find anything. When you have thousands of books like I do, mm-hmm. It gets a little bit...
I know.
Daunting.
I know. And a New Englander like me, it's a sin to throw away a hardcover book.
Oh, it's impossible for me. So once you got your character going and your story going, you really you built such a lovely way of describing the city and really making us feel as if we're in Salem when you were reading the books. I think it's just wonderful how you've done that.
I hoped to do that. I have a little background in travel writing, which helped.
Oh, I can see that. That's why it's so good.
And I'm quite observant about my surroundings. I'm lost half the time, but I am observant about my immediate surroundings. And Salem, and Chestnut, when you must go to Salem. You really must, now that you know you have the map.
Yes, no.
Chestnut Street in Salem is regarded as the most architecturally perfect street in America. It is just a joy to walk down the street and look at the beautiful doorways and the Samuel McIntyre architecture. It's wonderful. And then there's some really wonderfully tacky places to visit, and some magnificent churches, some very, very old and some extremely modern. I don't want to live there anymore because I don't like the weather. A visit once a year, particularly in the fall, is a delight.
And now, probably, you know, all the restaurants you mentioned, are they giving you free food when you go?
I hope when I go back they will.
I think they should.
I do too.
I think.
And a writer friend of mine who used to live in this area, Larry Cruz, told me that in his books he mentions as many places as he can because, A, he hopes to get free stuff, and, B, he hopes to hold a book signing there.
That's a good idea. And
he mentioned Bob's Carpet Mart.
Wow, that's good. You have to really think. That's product placement.
Yeah, isn't it?
So when you were writing, you wrote the books here. You're here based all, you live
yes.
here
yeah.
in Florida, but it all came back to you, all your
yes,
childhood.
And we go back. We still have family. In New England, and I don't have family in Salem, but in Gloucester, which is right nearby, and we usually manage to make a trip to Salem. And I even went to see the museum, the Peabody Museum, which has been entirely revamped since I was a little kid. And we used to go into, there was a mummy there, you know, which was very exciting. And to revisit the House of Seven Gables and the Ropes Memorial Mansion. It's all good.
Had you known about paranormal stuff before you wrote this book? Because, you know, I like the way, I've never been really involved in paranormal or tarot cards or any of that, but I actually loved the way you explained the tarot cards, because it's the first time I actually understood what they meant. I'd never really looked at them, but it was...
I hadn't either. When I invented River North, okay, here's an inside thing. River North is, there's a major river which runs through Salem and Danvers and Peabody called the North River. So I named her River North just as sort of an inside thing for Salem people. But when I invented River North, I had to give her some abilities, and I decided that she could read the tarot, which I knew nothing about. So I bought a few books, I bought a deck of cards, and then I found out that the card for my heroine has in the foreground a cat, and she has red hair, and the card just matched, and that worked in beautifully to the plot. And I learned, there's a lot of research that goes into this. I did not know a great deal about paranormal stuff, peripherally, because I'd read a few things. I knew a little bit about witchcraft because I was born in Salem. And but I had to double-check everything and try not to offend any witches. goodness knows you do not want to annoy any witches. So I was very careful with them. And now Orion can do whatever he wants. He's, I don't know yet what he can do.
Mm-hmm. Was your family from Salem for
yes.
long?
My father's people were from Salem for forever. I mean, you know, we go way, way back. And my mother's people were from Boston. And, pedigree as long as you're on, but no money, you know. But, so family, but I was raised in a Polish neighborhood, and I love Polish names. You notice that Lee's maiden name was Marilee Kowalski. I just love the rhythm of the Polish names. I love the food, too, and the men are very handsome. I went to school with a girl named Dottie Kowalski, and when the book came out, of course, I sent Dottie a copy, and she wrote back and thanked me very graciously for it, and she always liked the sound of her name, too. But she said, the print is so small, I can't read it. So she will be glad to hear that it'll be out in audio, and I will send her the book again.
And that's from your publisher,
yes.
Kensington.
Kensington has sold the rights to Tantor, audio people, whatever the rest of the name is. I'm not quite familiar with them yet. And they have assigned a reader, and I looked her up. She is an actress and a singer, so I presume she has a very nice voice. And I, too, am looking forward to seeing how it sounds.
And how did you get to Kensington? You didn't have an agent.
I did not have an agent. I submitted the first few chapters of Caught Dead-Handed to several agents, maybe six or seven, and got very polite rejections, some of the lots of luck rejection with, you know, well, it's very interesting, and we wish you luck in placing it elsewhere. And then I thought, I sold all my young adult books that I wrote back in the 80s and 90s without an agent, so I looked... I very carefully follow rules. It's important as a writer to follow the rules. And if it says in writer's market, we do not accept unagented submissions, don't do it. Don't bother. But Kensington, which is a significant New York publisher, doesn't require an agent. And they asked for a cover letter, a synopsis, and three chapters. And I sent them exactly that, being very careful to polish the heck out of it. I belong to I call them a power group. There's only three of us. There were four. One passed away. But Laura Kennedy from Tarpon Springs and Liz Dreyer from Clearwater and I meet every month. We're all writers. And we actually pass our manuscripts around for critique. So there was not a comma wrong. There was nothing wrong with those three chapters. And sure enough, they got back to me within a month and asked for the rest of the book. And a short time after that, they offered me a three-book contract on the strength of that.
Wow, that's great. That's exactly what you said is exactly what writers need to know, that you have to follow the rules with these, with both the agents and with the publishers.
Yep.
We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Graduations are coming up. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china, you will find just what you're looking for. One that says, you care. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo, the Silver Queen is the place to go. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Bette Midler, the Divine Miss M returns. May 11th, Amalie Arena.
One fine day.
Bette Midler.
She's the
back with one more more for the road.
Reserve seats on sale now at LiveNation.com and Ticketmaster Outlets.
Every ticket purchased online includes a copy of her new CD, It's the Girls.
Some people don't believe in mermaids. Hope that's not you, because they exist at Wickiwatchee Springs State Park off US 19 and State Road 50, just north of Spring Hill. Since 1947, the magic of the mermaids have been entertaining visitors at the 538-acre Springs Park. Come and watch in the 400-seat submerged theater, The Little Mermaid Show at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. daily. Wickiwatchee State Park offers mermaid shows, reptile shows, boat tours, and swimming in the pristine spring at Buccaneer Bay. Wickiwatchee State Park is a perfect backdrop for wedding receptions, birthday parties, picnics, meetings, retreats, family reunions, or just to relax on the white sandy beach. Step back in time when things were much simpler and enjoyable. Spend the day at an original theme park. Call 352-592-5656 or log on to wickiwatchee.com for upcoming events, hours, and ticket pricing. Wickiwatchee Springs State Park, where mermaids do exist.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Carol Perry, the author of a Witch City series of mystery books. The two of her books are already out, Tales You Lose and Caught Dead-Handed. They're excellent mystery books with a little bit of hint of paranormal. And what else would you say? It's a difficult genre to describe you, because it's your books are, on the one hand, very sophisticated, and very, in a way, sometimes a little bit adult, but they're wonderful, just mysteries.
I had not done mysteries before, though. I've been a fan of the genre forever. I loved Nancy Drew. I haven't met a woman yet who didn't.
Exactly.
Yeah. She was an independent woman. But, you know, her dad was never home. The housekeeper didn't pay much attention. She had a car.
I know.
She was awesome.
I read every Nancy Drew, yep. Like, yep. 10
They're
times.
Wonderful. They're wonderful. And I picked up one of the new Nancy Drew mysteries. They've toned her down a little. She was a little more feisty when we had her.
Yes, I think so. That also, for my boys, we had all the original Hardy Boys.
Oh, sure.
Which, we still have. We have all, I have all of the old books, the original Nancy Drew, yeah. Hardy Boys, because they've really changed it quite a bit.
Yes.
And it's not quite the same. And so if you ever have a chance to, you know, go to a library sale, although I don't know, libraries don't carry some of these books anymore, but find a bookstore and find the original versions, because they are really so great. And my second favorite was Cherry Ames, the nurse books. I don't know if you read them. And so for a long time, I wanted to be a nurse because of those books.
It's funny how books influence your later life experiences. I read two books back to back when I was in the seventh grade, and that's, you didn't have big media centers of kids' books. You had a narrow shelf in the branch library for kids, and the two books were Natalie Enters Advertising and A Star for Ginny. A Star for Ginny was by Phyllis Whitney, and I read those two books. Both of those girls went into advertising, and I decided then and there I was going to go into advertising and be either an artist or a copywriter. I was kind of good at both, uh-huh. But I turned out to be a much better writer than I was an artist. And with that in mind, that was where... You want to hear about some really bad guidance counselor advice?
Okay.
When I was in high school with a full boat scholarship, and I told the guidance counselor, who was also the boys' basketball coach, that I wanted to get into advertising. He said, "Oh, Carol, then you must take secretarial courses, because the only way a woman can get into an advertising agency is to be a secretary." So, taking his advice, and I was an only child, so I couldn't go far away from home because being an only child. So I went to Boston University, and I went to the College of Arts and Letters instead of the School of Communication, where I belonged. But after 1 year, I was offered a job as an assistant advertising manager for the Pickering Fuel Company in Salem, at more money than my daddy was making. So being of sound mind, I'm a college dropout with no degree at all in writing anything except on the job learning to be a copywriter.
Well, I think writing for a magazine is one of the best.
Oh, it was. I started writing for retail magazines, of course, while I was in that business, and then got interested in antiques and collectibles. still do that. I recently went to the Antiquarian Book Fair at the Coliseum, which is just a marvelous literary feast. I love it. And every time I go, I write about one certain aspect, because to review the whole show was too overwhelming. One year I did about the bookends. This year I decided to write about vintage mysteries, because I could tag it with Carol J. Perry, happens to have a series of mysteries, and I sold it to Antique Shop magazine.
So this is about book vintage collectible.
Yes, and you're speaking of the old Nancy Drews, made me think of it. There was one there that was from the 30s, and on the cover, there's had the paper cover and all. Nancy has a long white midi dress and a hat and gloves. And it was $75 for that. Nancy Drew, it was the secret of something candle. And so they have changed, and Nancy has evolved in her manner of dress. And I'm wondering, because I started with Nancy Drew and then wandered on to that book show, which just, oh, I know why. Because then I have sent that article to Mystery Writers of America, of which I'm a proud member, for their newsletter, and they're going to use it. So my magazine and nonfiction writing continues. I still think of myself as a nonfiction writer, because it just kind of evolved into this.
Well, for a while there, you did some young adult books.
I did. I did five. This was for school book fairs, mm-hmm. which is an enormous distribution all over America, Canada, some of them in the United Kingdom. So it was a very big distribution. But none of them were in bookstores, unless I happened to go and set up a book signing. So, and I had fan letters from kids from all over the place. It was very worthwhile doing. Unfortunately, I signed some bad contracts, and I do not have the rights to those books.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I noticed one of your books was Tiger Woods.
As a young... Yep. I finished that book up the month that he won his first Masters. And that was fun to research, too. His people were very, very cooperative and gave me all kinds of information. And his dad had written a book at about the same time. They let me see his dad's galleys of his book, so I had some really inside information in that book. I was proud of it. Another one of the nonfiction ones was 10 Women Political Pioneers. This was intended to be a series of 10 women in sports, 10 women in movies, 10 women in... So we started with political pioneers, and that was interesting to research, too. Unfortunately, the company went out of business before they got to the next one, but
that happens. Yeah. That happens in the business, so it's wonderful training to write all sorts of things, yep. like for the magazine, the travel magazine, mm-hmm. It opened your mind to so many things.
Oh, yes.
And I think one of the things that people, sometimes writers, new writers will say, well, no, I'm going to write a thriller, and then they just read like 100 thrillers and think that then that's going to help them to write the book. But I always explain that they have to go outside of just that genre. They have to know other things, because it's like exactly what you're doing. Why I think your books, your Witch City mysteries are so interesting, is that you know a lot about travel, you know a lot about antiques, so you can really fill in your story. They're not sort of one-dimensional stories. They're very full.
It's part of the write what you know. And if you don't know, like I didn't, we were talking off the air about the tarot cards, mm-hmm. that one of the characters, River North, is expert, and I am not, or I wasn't. So I had to research that mm-hmm. part. All of the Salem things I pretty well knew. I knew where things are. So in the department store setting in the second book is something I know. Mm-hmm. So it is easier if there are elements of that. When I was writing about writing for the young people, I had teenage kids. And I watched teenage TV, and I listened to teenage music because I had no choice mm-hmm. but to do so. So that was a good write-what-you-know time for me. In the third book, which is titled Look Both Ways and has a wonderful cover. Oh, my yellow cat looks great on Look Both Ways. And that has to do was something I learned about having lived in Salem all those years and didn't know until 2 years ago that there are tunnels under the city. And indeed, there are tunnels under many, many of the old cities, Boston too. I knew about Boston, but didn't know Salem had them. And that became one of the plot points.
Well, I lived in England. I had a house in a little village in England. And I was surprised when I bought the house. A few weeks after I bought the house, my guy came up to me. He was renovating it for me. He said, I have good news and I have bad news. And I said, okay, what is the good news? He says, well, you have dry rot, wet rot, and some other kind of rot. I said, oh, is that the good news or the bad news? He said, that's the bad news. But the good news is you've got this enormous big tunnel underneath your house. And I said, how big a tunnel? And he said, well, it's like 40 feet deep. It's right under the living room. I said, what do you mean it's right under the living room? He said, well, if you lift up the plank, you can see it. I said, no, I don't want to see. I don't want to see. Led to one of the old tunnels.
Yeah.
You know, during Henry VIII's time, sure, when the Catholics were in hiding, and because it was a Reading Cathedral nearby. And so I was on top of a tunnel. Yeah. Now, we had to fill in that tunnel because otherwise I would have lived in constant fear of going down 40 feet into the tunnel. So it was a little bit of an expense to fill in a tunnel.
Much of Salem, many of the tunnel areas have been filled in, but they are still there. There's actually a fellow who gives tunnel tours.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Yeah. They're real. And that was a wonderful dimension to add to the third book, because now I know about tunnels as well as tarot cards and cats, yellow cats particularly. Writing is such a learning process. It really is. And I did read quite a few cozy mysteries. And one of the things that reading within the genre does help with is you read some that are so wonderful you can only aspire to be that good, and some are such total, excuse me, crap, that you say, if they sold this, there is hope for me.
Yeah, that's definitely one way to look at it. Absolutely. That's funny. You're probably thinking about a television series for this book, huh?
People keep mentioning it, and I do not discard the idea. The whole thing has been such a wonderful journey so far that I'm at the point where I say, yeah, why not? It could happen.
Why not? Now, I know one of the reasons I have to go to Salem, I'm going to have to take my boys. You know, they're grown up in a way, but when they were young, they loved Bewitched. And so when I heard about there's actually a statue for Samantha there.
Yeah.
It's something that we have to see. But I think your books would make a wonderful, wonderful series. And I'm hoping that
isn't that a happy thought?
It is. It is. And I'm sending good vibes out there to some of the people who listen to my show and some of the people I know that I think that it really when you have a nice character to follow along, I think it's really great. And as I said, I like Lee Barrett. I think you've done a great job with her. So
she's become very real to me, and so has Aunt Ibby. Aunt Ibby is a combination of my Aunt Carrie Russell, which is Aunt Ibby's last name, and my ex-mother-in-law, Isabel Hill. So Ibby Russell became Aunt Ibby in the book.
And I like that she's very computer savvy.
Oh, yes, she is.
Which is funny. I know several women who one wouldn't think that, you know, I'm talking 80-year-old women who are really so computer savvy, and they're so much better at it than I am. I still, you know, like Facebook and Twitter sometimes gets to me. But
oh, yeah.
So are you big on the social media or not?
No. Fortunately, I have grandchildren who are. And it's definitely on a needs-to-know basis. If there's something I need to know, like if I have to send corrections on a manuscript to my editor, I have learned how to do that. I can do email. I'm learning what I have to. But Aunt Ibby knows everything.
I love that.
And Aunt Ibby, in book two, has developed a little love interest with Mr. Pennington, who is the headmaster of the school.
Well, this is going to be fun.
They both are old movie buffs and trade lines from movies.
Oh, that's great. I love old movies, so I'm going to enjoy that. I haven't read the second book yet, but you brought it into me today, so I'm anxious to read.
Well, it's only a month old, so you're entitled to miss it.
That's right. Tell me, do you do a lot of book fairs? You go around to...
I haven't. Most of them, although I'm becoming semi-famous, I'm not wealthy yet. And most of the book fairs are like in San Francisco or Dallas or something. And I think after book three is out, I may do some. And Kensington will help with expenses. Okay. So I may be looking forward to that.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Mother's Day is just around the corner. It's time to visit the Silver Queen, the premier location in the Tampa Bay area for gifts for all occasions. At the Silver Queen, you'll find the perfect gift for the queen in your life. From elegant earrings and jewelry bags to whatever mother loves. Beautiful photo frames that you won't find in the mall. So stop by the Silver Queen, located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Is there a wedding in your future? Then the Silver Queen is the place to go. They have an amazing selection of engagement and wedding rings, and their bridal registry will ensure that you receive gifts that you will treasure for a lifetime. How about a birthday? You must check out their musical Silver Plate Birthday Cupcake. It is the kind of gift that will be used year after year. It's just $40. It is the perfect gift for a baby's first birthday. Check out their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. Remember, the Silver Queen, 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. It is the store with the beautiful dome.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Bette Midler, the Divine Miss M returns May 11th, Amalie Arena. Bette Midler. She's back with one more for the road. Reserve seats on sale now at LiveNation.com and Ticketmaster outlets. Every ticket purchased online includes a copy of her new CD, It's the Girls.
At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy a lifestyle to fit your needs. From independent living, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing. Our exciting independent lifestyle is the perfect combination of freedom, comfort, and security. Enjoy total independence with peace of mind. Our independent lifestyle includes chef-prepared meals in our beautiful waterfront dining room, a continental breakfast, all utilities, including cable and telephone, housekeeping with linen service, scheduled transportation, including trips for shopping, local restaurants, theater, and more. Our activities program is second to none. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy affordable luxury waterfront senior living with a million-dollar view. Call today, 727-445-4069, and discover where caring, compassionate service really makes the difference.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Carol Perry. Carol, you were telling us that you were, before becoming a writer, you had been thinking about becoming an artist, and I noticed that your covers on your books are really fantastic. Did you work with a designer? How did you come up with this?
Kensington hires the artist, and the cover of Caught Dead Handed was his first book for Kensington, and he's done all three of them. The way it works is in Caught Dead Handed, they had the whole manuscript, and in the subsequent two, they only had a chapter or two when they started working with the artist. So they asked me for some key elements of the story, and like on the cover of Tales You Lose, you'll see a sign for a shoe, an advertising sign for a shoe, and that is involved in it. And there is a trap door that goes down, and there's some coins and some keys. So there are several things there, and then the artist will come up with a sketch and they'll send it to me. And I understand that if he came up with something I really hated it, they would do something else. But of course, they're wonderful covers. And other than a few small suggestions, like the clothing on the ghost girl on the Tales You Lose cover, she in the book she has a wedding dress on, so he had to change that. But it's just been delightful. I have so many compliments on the covers. People asking me the name of the artist, and I do not know the answer to that.
Wow. Because they are really, really great covers.
Wait till you see the third one. Oh, well, this is scary.
Well, it's a process, and you know when you're writing a book, there's so many elements that come into it. Once you write the book, of course, there's the editing. Now, having experienced, I'm sure it was much easier for you than for most young writers who are coming on or new writers. Who have never worked with a publishing house, then it's more of a sort of a shock to them how they have to work with an editor and how they have to go through the book and fix everything that, you know, that needs to be fixed.
My editor is very easy to work with. I didn't require a lot of editing as to the grammar and punctuation.
Yeah.
Because
of your group that you work with.
Because of my group. One of the girls used to be a copy editor, and another one writes short stories.
Well, that's a great reason why, when you're writing, to try to find a writer's group. There are so many writers' groups. You can go to meetups and other to the libraries and mm-hmm. discover where you have a group of writers in your area, and it's wonderful to get together with them and to do exactly what you did, sort of pre-edit it before it ever gets to the publisher. Mm-hmm.
It's in as good shape as you can get it.
Exactly.
And then she made some suggestions. She made a few plot suggestions, which were very well taken, and one that I disagreed with, but I backed up and made some things a little clearer to satisfy her curiosity. But it's the copy editor who is so thorough. I quoted, I had a line because Mr. Pennington and I, Ibby, exchanged movie quotes, and I had a quote from The Shawshank Redemption, and the copy editor pointed out that my quote was missing a word. She looked it up, and sure enough, there was a word, and she said, I wanted to be sure, so I rented the movie.
Wow, that is a...
And then she says things like, well, in book one, you said that Lee's kitchen was such and such, and in book two, you have moved the table. You know, things like that. They're so thorough. This book is so thoroughly vetted. It pages and pages of this stuff. I couldn't believe it. But if there's a mistake in there, I don't think you're going to find it.
But no, it's an exciting process. That
it is.
Working with the editor and a copy editor like mm-hmm. that, it sort of opens your mind to things that you hadn't thought mm-hmm. about. And I think it's...
Little things.
Yes.
She'll say, Pete took out his Sharpie pen and wrote on the evidence bag on page 102, but he never put the pen back in his pocket.
Oh. I love...
All right. Well, so then you haven't put his pen back in the pocket. Most readers wouldn't have caught it, but somebody might have, and it would have. It's you don't want a stopper. You don't want anyone to stop reading and say, "Hey, he didn't put his pen back in the pocket." So, it's all good.
So, do you do speaking? About two writers or two writers groups?
Yeah, I do. I haven't done as much as I'd like to. I used to do some kind of workshops that would go on all day, and. I have to do that again. I just haven't had time because I've been chasing deadlines. So I haven't done as much as I'd like to. I spoke a little bit at the Tarpon Springs Library yesterday about two writers and about writers. Because love doing it.
It's wonderful to encourage writers. I really want to do more, even for myself, to encourage young writers. I think it's so important that, you know, in schools nowadays, I'm not sure how much time they get to do creative writing, if at all. Mm-hmm. And sometimes schools don't approach creative writing the right way, because it is something that you know, the young people who grew up recently with Harry Potter, they're all readers.
Yes.
So it, on the one hand, although many people think people aren't reading as much, it's not true. People are reading. When you see the list of bestsellers and how some books will sell millions of copies, mm-hmm. and I'm not even going to mention one that we all shades of something that we don't want to even think about because we can't.
It's like, so bad.
It's not that. It's just that it's like too overwhelming for the minds of most of us. But you know, there are, whether it's a political books that sell millions of copies or books like Harry Potter. I mean, these books sold, mm-hmm. and so it's true that there are a lot of readers out there. And a lot of people who, if you write something that's good and get it out there so that people will start clamoring for it, as they did with Harry Potter. So I hope that there are more writers who approach that sort of genre where they get the young people mm-hmm. reading, because we need all of these people to grow up and then read more.
And the people who aspire to write for, I wrote for what's called middle grade readers. This would be your 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade reader, pretty much. And also for your YA, young adult readers. You have to read what's current. You have to read stuff that's out in the last 2 or 3 years, because Nancy Drew and Five Little Peppers is not going to make it in today's market. You have to see what's selling now. Some it'll curl your hair, really. But the kids, because of all the TV and all the exposure they have on the internet and all, your middle grade reader is a little more mature than even 10 years ago. It's kind of scary, but do read what's current if you're going to write for young people, because if it's just Mickey Mousey stuff, they won't get through it. And writing, when I first was writing the children's books, and I went to a writer's conference, I was a presenter at one of the writer's conferences, and some fellow said, well, you know, of course you just write for kids, and that's easy, but when are you going to write a real book? Kids are a very demanding audience. If you can't grab them in the first chapter, they won't finish the book at all. It's very demanding. So don't think it's an easy thing to write for kids, even little kids.
Now, do you have you done any? You haven't any writing contests?
Actually, Caught Dead Handed's original title was Nightshades, and I entered it in the Florida Freelance Writers Association has a contest every year. And I entered the first chapter, and I took first place, which was very encouraging. And then I went on to sell it. So, yeah, I do believe in contests very much.
Absolutely. There's a writer's digest contest coming up, and it's something that I wanted to tell all of my listeners about. This is a real nice opportunity to submit your work. The deadline is June 5th. It's the 84th annual writing competition from Writer's Digest. And you can, they have many categories: inspirational writing, spiritual and religious, and there's a big market for religious writing, memoirs, magazine feature articles, Main Street literature, and romances and mysteries, and there's even poetry, and they have not just non-rhyming poetry, they have rhyming poetry, which maybe finally I will enter, because usually so many of the poetry contests, they say they don't want rhyming poetry, but I can't write poetry that doesn't rhyme. It's like, I don't know, it was ingrained in me or something, I don't know, by the shores of Gitche Gumee or something.
Yeah, I'm a rhymer too, not a poet.
It's hard for me, but maybe this year I will enter one. But they also have stage plays and even television and movie scripts. And this is all from the Writer's Digest, the 84th annual contest. It's going to be, the deadline is June 5th. So if you've got something and you want to polish it, you have You have a month or so here, polish it, get it into good shape, and go to Writer's Digest. And I will actually put it on. I will put it on my Facebook page today. So if you go to my Facebook page, that's Patsy Gill, P-A-T-Z-I-G-I-L, Patsy Gill, and I will put up the information about the Writer's Digest, the 84th annual contest. And enter something. Enter many things. You can enter as many things as you want and try, right?
Absolutely. And then real people will see it, not just your husband or your kids.
And not just real people, really good people.
Yeah.
Really important people who, if they like you, can really, really help you. It doesn't even matter if, you know, you don't have to be win the first place prize.
They have quite a few honorable mentions.
Oh, they have. That's
and it's, that's very gratifying and important.
Exactly. So it for this contest, your work must be original in English, unpublished and unproduced, and it must not be accepted by any other publisher. And so if you're interested, please go to my Facebook page today. And I will put the information up. And while you're there, like me, because I like you. I like everybody. And so I want to just say thank you very much, Carol, for joining us today. I hope everyone will. Oh, what is your website?
www.caroljperry.com.
Okay. And when you go to Amazon, just type in Carol Perry, yep, and your books will come up.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And next week I have Eloisa James, a great romance writer. She's had 12 bestsellers on New York's best-selling list. And so she's she's a fantastic writer. And I hope that everyone will listen in to that, because she's going to be calling us in from London. And she's a fascinating woman. And not only is she a romance writer, she's married to an Italian Knight. So what can,
awesome,
what, how much better can you get? And my name is Patsy Gill. So if you want, please go to my webpage. It's or send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com. My webpage is radio-joyonpaper.com. And please go there and find out more about my interview today. So thank you for joining me today. This is Patsy with a Z, wishing you a great week. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So this week, get motivated, get some time, and write. One page at a time. In a month, you'll have a chapter. In a year, you'll have a book. So join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, joy is not an option, it's an order. So find your joy and share it. Bye.